there's nothing wrong with having, you know, a couple of days off here if you really need it, or, you know, this one session, oh, I've got something really important I need to do and it would make me feel a lot better if I can go and do that. And then, you know, I think you've got to find this flexibility to get the best out of you as a person rather than, you know, you as a swimmer.
Welcome to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, where we aim to give swimming the coverage and publicity it deserves. Every week, we celebrate the sport we love with amazing special guests and topics from around the swimming pool. And now, here are your hosts, Scott and Dan.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott, and I'm joined this week by my co-host, Dan, and a swimmer with one of the best feel-good comeback stories around in British swimming.
Yeah, hey everyone. I'm very much looking forward to this one with so many different things we could chat about with our guest, including his amazing comeback in the sport, proving that comebacks can be done. It's a great story of trusting your ability, believing in yourself, and by doing that, you're able to achieve a dream.
Yes, so please welcome onto this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, Wickham District swimmer and a member of Team England at this summer's Birmingham Commonwealth Games, Adam Barrett. Adam, thank you for joining us this week. How are things with you?
No worries, guys. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, not too bad.
Great stuff. I think to kick things off, rather than us giving everyone a rundown of your career, why don't you take our listeners through your journey in the sport of swimming?
Okay, right. So, you know, I just swam as a kid. I started off a small club. Quite a big club, really. Reading Swimming Club is where I started. Then when I was about 15, 16, I moved across to Tilehurst Swimming Club, which is in the same sort of region, but just a slightly smaller club, which is coincidentally where I coach now. And then from there, went on to Loughborough University. It was always a pretty decent sort of junior swimmer, like going to nationals, getting into finals, that sort of stuff. But then it wasn't really till I went up to Loughborough and maybe in my second year, things started to click for me. And then we started moving things on a little bit more. So I was in like the university program up there for 3 years, then moved into the, National Centre, whatever they call them now. I'm not sure, maybe 3 more years after that. And then whilst I was in there, that was when I sort of qualified for a few teams, went to Commonwealths in 2014, Worlds 2015, a couple of World Short courses in there as well. So from there, I think sort of went back into the university program for my last couple of years up there, and then sort of stopped swimming in summer of 2017, roughly. Around that time, and then, you know, was off for 4 years, and made a comeback around this time last year, near enough, probably a little bit before that, but I'm pretty sure there was Glasgow meet around this time last year, which was the first competition I did back, basically, so roughly around 4 years, near enough, and then, you know, as you guys said in your intro there, managed to qualify for Commonwealth Games this year coming up. Yeah, so it's pretty exciting stuff.
It's an amazing story. I mean, there's so much to unpack on this episode, like your coaching, your comeback into swimming. But let's first of all start off with your selection for that Commonwealth Games. Congratulations. What were your initial thoughts when you got the call-up?
Oh, thank you. You know, just very proud and happy, really, I'd say. You know, I saw the qualifying standards come out maybe about just under a year ago, and really, when I came back, I never really thought about swimming long course meets really again. I came back to swim at the ISL, and that was the main reason. But then I saw the qualifying times for the Commonwealths, with it being home games as well. I was like, all right, this could be quite fun. Could be worth doing. And you know, they had it for the 50 fly. I thought, right, that's a good shot. You know, I can get that. Obviously they take 3 per event as well, which just meant, you know, the qualification was there. You know, it was certainly achievable within sort of the time frame and sort of like my training environment and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, it was just, you know, great to get myself back up there, to be honest. And looking forward to walking out there in the summer, you know, to a crowd of English people, hopefully. It would be fantastic.
You say it was ISL that brought you back to swimming. We've discussed on this podcast, we thought the money that was involved in it was keeping swimmers around, but I'm guessing you're one of the only ones who outwardly says it literally brought you back to the sport. How important was the money for you to sustain a career in swimming and come back?
You know, it's a massive factor. You know, swimming takes up a lot of time, really. And if you're not supported by anybody, funded by your government, well, not your government, your national governing body, you know, really trying to find the time to fund yourself or people willing to fund you is incredibly difficult. I mean, I always found it quite difficult. And to see, I sort of saw, was it the second season of the ISL, and I got sort of wind of the sort of money people were getting from doing it. And I thought, oh, do you know what? I've been really competitive in this environment. You know, short course was always my, you know, my strength. I knew that. I knew I was, you know, probably a lot better at that than I was long course swimming. And I was looking, I was just sitting at home thinking, you know, I could still do a job for in this environment. You know, I just got to get myself back into it and see what happens, you know, and then hopefully things will progress and, you know, I can get back to sort of racing in that environment. Obviously, I need the team to take a massive punt on me. And luckily one did. And yeah, like, you know, I thought it was fantastic. I thought the whole setup, you know, it's got its criticisms. We can't ignore that. You know, there's a lot of issues going around. There's massive extenuating circumstances for other things that we won't get into too much. But, you know, it's a tough time for a lot of people out there. And it's, you know, it's greatly affected sort of like the league going forward. But, you know, we're all positive that, you know, it should be back up and running next year sometime. And for me, I just think it's such a uniquely positive way to keep swimmers engaged in the sport, you know, and paying them like they're proper athletes. You know, at the end of the day, they are proper athletes. They deserve to get paid for what they are doing. They're entertaining people. They're doing things, you know, that are, you know, out of this world. They shouldn't be doing it for free, you know, not at all. So really, you know, it was a combination of me wanting to get back in and race again, and then also the viability of you can fund yourself from doing it as well, because if you couldn't fund yourself, you know, there's no point really. You know, it's as harsh as it is to say.
I mean, you say one of the teams took a punt on you, and it turned out to be a pretty big team. I mean, Energy Standard is, you know, the biggest, if not the second biggest. What was it like swimming under James Gibson and Coach Rushton and all of the top class swimmers there?
Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, James was my coach at Loughborough for 3 years, between like 2014, 2016, 17, around that time. But, you know, we hadn't been in contact in the years I'd been out of the pool or since he'd left Loughborough. So, you know, I was very grateful, really, to get the call from him to say, you know, do you want to jump on board? And, like, to be honest, I was going in a bit green into the whole situation. I hadn't really paid that much attention to swimming, like top level swimming, when I was out of the pool. So I didn't really realise sort of how good Energy Standard were. And then when I got there, I was like, ah, okay, I've really landed on my feet here. Like, I've absolutely, you know, I've almost hit the jackpot a little bit. And, you know, but I can't thank the guys enough for giving me that opportunity. And then from then on, I was just trying to do everything I could to repay that for them.
How tough was it to jump back into elite level training after, what, 3-4 years out of the pool?
I don't know. I wouldn't say I've found it that difficult. I think that's probably because I kept myself physically fit in the time I was off. I didn't just, like, not do anything. I carried on gymming, you know, I kept myself in decent shape, not, you know, nothing like I was when I was training, but, you know, constantly just at a relatively fit level. So when it came to, like, get back into stuff, I already kind of had a bit of a base. I wasn't going from scratch, if you know what I mean. You know, it's not like, I remember when you're swimming years ago, you take like 4 or 5 weeks off over the summer. come back and you'd feel dreadful, like in the pool. I never really had that. Okay, you know, I used to swim maybe once every 3 weeks, once every 2 weeks, just jump in once every now and again after about taking 6 to 8 months totally out of the pool. And I was just, you know, I was getting in and I was thinking, you know, I don't even feel too bad, really. You know, I couldn't get in and do a super, super long session, but technically and physically, it didn't feel too bad in the water. So it kind of like very naturally progressed back into the top level training. You know, don't get me wrong, I still probably can't do things I used to be able to do, but I'm having to find new things I can do better than I used to, if you understand what I mean.
And you do this training down at Wickham, is that, that's under Kev?
Yeah, combination. I get over to Wickham maybe 4 times a week, and then I do the rest of my sessions in a public pool near me, or there's a couple of sessions at Tireless where I coach, where I can jump in a lane and get stuff done there. But my club is, yeah, Wickham.
So what's it like training in a public session? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm extremely fortunate. I mean, I've been going to this pool since I stopped swimming. And there's a great bunch of guys down there. You know, there's about, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 of them who, you know, they train together. I sort of go down middle of the day, sort of like 12 till 2, that sort of time frame. And they're, you know, they're in there every day. They're great guys. They're, you know, they're so accommodating. And I got to know them a lot over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. So when I told them I was, you know, getting back in and swimming, you know, some sessions they're like, oh, you know, we'll join in with what you're doing. Or they're like, no, you can have the lane to yourself, you know. And the staff down there are great as well. You know, I've never had an issue in my life down there, really. Everybody's great, to be honest. I know, because I know there's lots of horror stories.
Yeah, it sounds almost like an unofficial kind of master's club.
I mean, you know, I think really they would love to find a master's program for themselves. But, you know, they're able to do everything they want to do down there. You know, they do lots of like channel swims and things like that. So, they're decent level of swimmers, to be honest. And, you know, it fits in with what I need to do perfectly.
Well, with these public sessions, do you then write your own sessions?
Yeah, I write all my own sessions. Yeah.
So you've got a rough idea of periodization and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, I plan everything out ahead of time. I do always have to be slightly adaptable just because of the nature of how the training works and how sort of like, you know, pool time, and sometimes there's issues, sometimes at work, you know, I have to be very flexible with what I'm doing. So there's always like a guideline, and then, but if anything changes, I need to quickly adapt, and there's always room and ways to do that. So it's very much a no stress approach to everything. I think when you start getting stressed and like sort of wound up, oh damn, I couldn't do this here, or I couldn't do that there, it only snowballs. You know, you're not going to miss out on too much from that one thing, and chances are you're probably going to be able to make it up in something different later on in the week. So it's just staying relaxed and making things work for me. You know, because I'm only training myself, I'm the only person I need to worry about in that environment. So you know, it's a lot more specific and adaptable.
And that attitude comes from your experience through the sport. You've gone through it for so many years. You've also had that time away from the pool as well, and you know you can come back. So missing the odd session here and there, when there's circumstances, it's forgivable, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bit of an eye opener, really. How, not how quickly, but you know, how you're almost conditioned to think everything matters all the time. And I think, yeah, you know, you've got to be on it. Don't get me wrong, you've got to be on it. But there's nothing wrong with having, you know, a couple of days off here if you really need it. Or, you know, this one session, oh, I've got something really important I need to do, and it would make me feel a lot better if I can go and do that. And then, you know, I think you've got to find this flexibility to get the best out of you as a person rather than, you know, you as a swimmer. And I, that's kind of the approach I'm taking into to everything nowadays.
Yeah, I think recovery is seriously underrated, to be honest with you. It's what makes you go fastest, what makes your muscles recover to be able to then, let's say, peak at commies, hopefully for you, for example. I think it needs to be channeled more into age group and beyond, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, like, for me, recovery's become massive now. You know, there's a lot of times with how my schedule works, I'm either going straight from training to work or vice versa. So, you know, it's making sure when I've got that downtime, you are relaxed, you are getting the best out of yourself. Otherwise, you know, I've had weeks where I'm just absolutely shattered by like Wednesday. And, you know, I know, oh man, I'm not going to get anything positive out of the rest of this week unless I have a lie-in in the morning. So, you know, the session that was planned for the morning, you know, that's got to be a lie-in, you know, take it later on in the day, get that recovery in and move it on from there.
So the reason you're having to be so flexible of your sessions is, am I right in thinking, because you are coaching on poolside yourself and that is prime swimming time usually?
So I'm head coach at Tyler's Swimming Club. Like I said, it's a club I came through, well, not came through, but when I was like 16, I moved there. So it was the last club I was at before I went to university. Yeah, and I've been there for pretty much since the day I stopped swimming. Not as head coach, but you know, now I'm in that role. So most of the sessions we have are quite like early mornings, late in the evenings, you know, standard club swimming. You know, some evenings, you know, I don't finish till 9. So it's finding essentially time during the day where I can swim, which I'm able to do over at Wickham. You know, they're good enough over there that in the afternoons, I can often get in during the public sessions and have a lane because it's quite empty, and we've worked that out with the pool, me and Kev, and they've been very accommodating with that sort of stuff. So, but that's only a couple of times a week when I'm in the mornings over at Wickham. Because it's long course, it's easier for me to then fit in my stuff around what the other swimmers are doing, because I'm very conscious that I don't want to get in the way of what they're doing as well, because it is their club and their environment as well. You know, I need to make sure that I'm not being a burden on, you know, the 20 other swimmers in the pool. You know, so I try and be as sort of incognito as possible, basically. And that comes more into the, you know, the flexibility of stuff and sessions as well. You know, if, you know, I need to add something to a turnaround because, you know, all the swimmers are coming into, you know, I've got to do that. So it's finding the time basically during the day, essentially, to, which was initially a challenge. But managed to make it work, and I've managed to find a solution to that problem at the moment anyway.
And what's it like with the swimmers that you coach? With you going to Commonwealth Games, you're an international swimmer. Do they look at you as a role model and sort of aspire to be you?
I hope so, but I hope they actually look up to me more as a coach than as a swimmer. I try to keep my swimming stuff as separate as possible when I'm coaching the kids. Obviously I'm going to, you know, take from past experiences and stuff like that, but I really don't want the focus to be me. The focus is them. So when I'm there, you know, entirely the focus is on coaching them. It's never about me at all. And you know, you know, if your kids come up to you and say, well done, I'm like, yeah, that's fine. I've got no problem with that. But as much as possible, I try to make it about the kids and not about me in that environment.
Is that something you'd advise active swimmers to do if they are looking to get into coaching while they're still training? Kind of separate the two out completely?
I think you have to. Well, I don't know if you have to. But I've certainly found it's the best way to do things. I think sometimes if you come into that sort of thing and you're still a swimmer, you know, chances are, depending on your level, you're probably going to be a higher level than the kids you're coaching. You know, that's probably what's going to be happening. So you have to then go into that environment and understand that they're all training for a different thing that you're training for. So if you come in with your attitude of, I'm, you know, Mr. Big Time, you know, done this, done that, and you bring that to everything they're doing, they're going to be intimidated, you know. And you know, so don't get me wrong, some of them will aspire to that, but there's going to be a lot of them thinking, oh, I can't do that, you know, I can't do this, I can't do that. So I try not to have that way with them. I try to make it all about them, their positives, what they're doing right, what they're doing correctly. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I coach them in a way that I want them to be successful. But I never, well, one thing I never do is compare anything I would have done to what they do. Because I think that's error 101, basically, if you start doing stuff like that. You need to understand that they're just, everyone's a different athlete. And you're going to get a couple of kids that probably can do stuff you can do, but you'll get a lot that aren't, but are still working towards doing that. And you know you got to have that patience and that understanding of that, I think.
You stopped swimming and you immediately went into coaching. Was that always the game plan? Is that something you've always wanted to do?
I mean, not really. I just needed a job. If I'm perfectly honest, and I just happened to text my old coach and asked if they need any help, and you know, here I am 4.5 years later and I'm still there. I think it was always something I was going to gravitate towards. You know, I worked as a personal trainer as well in my years off, so that sort of coaching, mentoring, whatever you want to call it, I think is something that is innate in me. And it just seems to have worked out that way that I've sort of found that, really.
What is it about, what is it about coaching that inside you really enjoy? Is it the fact that you can create these paths or help other swimmers along their path?
I think there's that. There's the sense that I want to be able to give these swimmers the advice and guidance that maybe I didn't receive at a young age, and that understanding and, you know, and the knowledge that comes with everything that I've, you know, been able to do over, you know, my career, and sort of help educate them from a young age. Because I always, going to university, I was quite, I was severely uneducated in the world of swimming. I sort of only really ended up at Loughborough because I got sort of like a reduced offer at the last minute. You know, I was on my way to Portsmouth before that. You know, I was just going to swim down at Portsmouth. Didn't really think too highly of it. It wasn't really till I went to university and got exposed to that environment that I started to understand, oh, okay, this is how things are probably going to be done. So I tried to sort of expose them a little bit to that, but not too much, because you want to develop them to a point where that when they go off, you know, from you, hopefully to bigger and better things, they get that new stimuli from new environment, and they get that excitement from being able to do all these new things. So I try not to overload them with everything, but still keep them on the right path and, you know, give them the knowledge that they need to be successful.
It sounds like you've got a real passion, enthusiasm for this coaching. What's your aspirations? Where, how far do you want to take it?
To be honest, I don't really know, is the honest answer. I really like being part of the club I'm part of. It's a, you know, we're not a big club, but I would rather sort of stay there and try and help it grow into something more successful over the next few years. You know, we're based in Reading. You know, I just think there's so much scope down in this sort of area near London to have something successful as a club. Obviously you've got Wickham 40 minutes down the road, but sort of that's a long journey. I do it every day. So something maybe a bit closer to this sort of area. You know, we've got a university here, we've got great transport links to London. I don't see why that can't be something we're looking to do over the next few years. So I'd much rather maybe do that than sort of be involved with all the sort of elite level stuff.
All of these answers to all the questions we've asked you about coaching, it's all extremely selfless. It's kind of your whole attitude really towards coaching. It's really nice and refreshing. But we're going to ask you to be a little selfish and talk about commies. It's coming up very, very soon. How much are you looking forward to them?
I'm really excited. No, I really am excited to get out there, be part of the team, be surrounded by those sort of swimmers again. That's what I sort of found when I went away with the ISL stuff, how much I enjoyed being part of that environment again. Obviously, you know, training on your own, you know, you can get everything done, but there's just something about being around a group of people all trying to do the same thing that's just so uplifting. So, you know, we've actually got a camp in a couple of weeks in Lanzarote for, I think, some of us who aren't going to Worlds that we're heading out to. So that's going to be a great chance to just, you know, get around some people, you know, share some ideas, see what everyone's doing, get everyone in good shape, get a bit of sun. And then, you know, the big day's then only about a month away when we come back from that. And, you know, I'm really excited to just walk out, hear that roar from the crowd, hopefully, and get going.
How, when you're going to a training camp like that, do you separate out the mindset of swimmer and coach? Because as a part of me, I'd like to go there as a, you're there to focus as a swimmer, but also right now you're a coach. So there's a chance to be learning from the elite coaches and to take it back to your club. So do you separate it out, or do you go there and sponge every aspect?
Certainly in recent sort of trips, I've tried to soak up information as and where I can, you know, whereas before maybe I went on these teams and I wouldn't really talk to people. Sort of like coaches, support staff, that stuff. You just sort of keep yourself to yourself, go about your day. Sort of trying to converse with people, just understand their way of thinking behind things, just see where we, you know, have the same ideas or not the same ideas. And, you know, sometimes people want to talk to you, sometimes they don't, and that's, you know, that's fine. And, you know, it's just, like I said to you earlier, just sort of trying to loosen those boundaries a little bit. Everyone seems so constricted by their own way of doing things that they don't want to let people in because they feel sort of maybe vulnerable by doing that, that people are going to steal something from them. But really, you're all trying to do the same thing, and not necessarily what you're doing is going to be beneficial for that person. But, you know, something they might be doing might be beneficial for you. So it goes both ways. So, you know, try to soak up that knowledge when I can. But probably when I go away this time, it's going to be just swimming focused, because sometimes I do find you just need to switch that coaching side of your brain off and just think about yourself for a little bit. And I probably hope to do that when I'm away in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, because I think that's what we've done with a lot of, or given advice to some of these younger swimmers like Casey Shanahan, trying to learn what she can from the London Raw swimmers, and Ed Mildred from London Raw as well. I think it's all about being mature. I think that just comes with age, trying to learn from the best. What are your thoughts on the England team as a whole? Because I'm thinking there's a good few medal opportunities up for grabs.
I think it's a strong team. I think also you're probably going to see a few medals for GB that you won't, sorry, not GB, for England, that you won't have seen for a very, very long time in some events. You know, you're going to have your main guys doing what they do, but I think there's certainly going to be some big swims come the summer.
How much do you think having a home crowd and that extra level of support and encouragement will affect the team?
Well, I think it's massive, but I really enjoy that type of thing. Like any sort of crowd, you know, gathering. You know, even when you're younger and you're at like a Speedo or Arena League, even that, you know, just having everybody cheering like really helps. But, you know, I remember walking out at Glasgow, you know, getting a massive cheer. And, you know, it's Great Britain, but it's Scotland, not England. So you never know how that was going to go. But, you know, they got right behind all the home nations. And I just think it'll go two ways for a lot of people. Some people will walk out, they'll heal the roar, and they'll be like, oh my God, yeah, I'm ready to go. But then you're going to get a couple of people maybe who have never experienced it before, who may retreat a little bit. So it's maybe just understanding it's coming beforehand, and then preparing yourself for it. Because for me, I just can't understand why that wouldn't get you going. I think it's great. you know, in any sport, but especially for our sport, where, you know, you go to nationals or British champs and there's like 10 people in the crowd. And so you go to these bigger meets where everybody's behind it, and it shows what the sport can be and the environment you can get at the sport if you do everything correctly and, you know, don't half-ass it.
So you've obviously found an enjoyment for swimming again, whether that's coaching, whether that's swimming. Are you looking to kind of continue after the Commonwealth Games for future international meets, maybe ISL if it comes back in 2023? What's the plan Birmingham?
Well, I mean, yeah, obviously I want the ISL to get up and running, keep going. And then the plan is, you know, I'll do that as long as someone will have me on a team. As long as my body will keep up, as long as I'm enjoying it, you know, I'm more than happy to keep that going. But obviously that's, you know, a bit of an if at the moment. As for future teams, personally, I can't see myself qualifying for anything else after this, just due to sort of the way I like schedule the training and stuff. Only really works for sort of short course or a 50 long course. I haven't really got the pool time to be able to push anything out for sort of like 100 long course. You need to be doing more in the pool for that, and I can't physically do that at the moment. So unless they start putting sort of 50 fly as a qualifying time for Worlds, then, you know, there's probably very little opportunity for me to qualify for anything else going forward. But, you know, I'm fine with that, to be honest. Anything else I do now is a bonus. So,
yeah. World short course are in Melbourne, aren't they? So maybe end of this year?
Well, yeah, I'd love to, but I think the chances of me going are pretty much zero. So that's... You know,
British swimming don't like 50s, do they? So that's mainly the problem.
Or people who can swim short course.
Yeah, and that's why.
Yeah. One or two. No. Yeah. But we'll see. You never know. Never say never, but I mean, you know, the outcome is probably unlikely. You know, I'd love to get out of there. I think the results from the last World Short Course, I'd have been pretty competitive up there in a couple of events. Hopefully, you know, another year behind me. Be competitive in other events that I wanted to get back, but you know, just have to wait and see, to be honest. Well, you know, there's a lot of good ISL swimmers in this country. Sorry, say again.
Yeah. Sorry, fingers crossed on ISL.
Yeah, I mean, fingers crossed. I mean, everything I've heard and everything I'm seeing, you know, the new two guys come in. I think it will get up and running again. I can't see why not. It's certainly, for me, is the future of this sport. You know, I had people, you know, obviously I was like, asked my friends to watch it. I was like, just give it a go. They're only interested in swimming as me, you know, and really that's not really their interest in, you know, really they're not interested at all. They're only watching it because I'm there. I was like, guys, just, you know, just watch the whole match. You know, see if you enjoy it. And they were like, you know what, that was actually really good. You know, they enjoyed it, you know, and these are just, you know, bog standard sort of like football fans basically tuning in to watch swimming, but they were like, no, it was good. So if you can get people like that to watch it, but it's the exposure and you need it constantly. Otherwise, you know, and you can't put it behind, I don't think they helped themselves putting it behind a paywall straight away. You sort of needed to get everyone in first and then start putting that sort of stuff on board. But we'll see. I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
Definitely. Kind of final question before quick fire. A big talking point of this episode has been your comeback into swimming. What would your advice be for someone who has stopped but is really thinking now is the time to get back in the water?
Make sure you have a plan in place. You know, make sure you understand what you're doing. Like I said earlier, be flexible. Make sure you believe in what you're doing as well, you know, because you can come back and sort of not be fully into it, and then it's not really worth anybody's time if you're doing that. You know, you've got to get back in and commit, and you've got to find a way to make it work. You know, if you want to do it bad enough, you'll find a way to make it work. I don't necessarily mean you'll get the success, but you'll find a way to make everything fit so that you can do what you want to do. You know, you know, my best bit of advice would be to just do it, you know. I sort of chose to do it when I did because it was off the back of COVID. Mm. And it just seemed like the perfect opportunity. There have been a lot of people at the pool, sort of, you know, bar, you know, the top percentage who got to train. But most people have been out of the pool. It was a good time to get back in, sort of see what happens. No pressure. Go for it. See what happens.
Mm. Sound advice.
Yeah, definitely. So we do usually finish with some quick fire questions for every elite guest. How did that sound for you?
Go for it.
So what is your favourite event?
Ooh. I think if you'd asked me this question maybe 8 years ago, I'd have said 200 freestyle short course. But now I'd probably say 100 freestyle short course.
Okay.
At the moment, yeah.
Who is your swimming idol?
Oh, that's a tough one. I don't know. I was always a fan. He was a bit of a, you know, obviously he got the silver medal to Phelps in 2008, but I was always a fan of Cavitch. You know, I thought the guy was so good at 50-100 fly, and you know, just unfortunate that probably the greatest swimmer of all time was better than him, unfortunately, and just kept it, touched him out on those key occasions. But I thought the guy was, you know, he was the only other guy to go 49 until sort of the other guys have started been doing it recently. So I think he was, you know, he was one hell of a swimmer.
Yeah, a little bit under the radar, maybe his achievements in the sport.
Sort of gets over. I think his achievements get overshadowed because, you know, there's a couple of swimmers like that, you know. Think of people like Laszlo Che, who was probably coming second and, you know, got so many medals in the bank, but no one really remembers how fantastic he was because he was around with Phelps and Lochte. You know, but his longevity was incredible, you know.
Yeah.
What has been your proudest moment in swimming so far?
I'd probably say in 2016, when I went away to the World Cups, I'd had a real bad couple of years in the pool. Sort of, I say real bad, like, you know, off the back of sort of 2014, sort of medals internationally, sort of didn't really kick on how I wanted to, and something just wasn't clicking. I was struggling in the pool for a couple of years there, just environment wasn't right. What you know, what we were trying to do wasn't working. So sort of took a bit of a gamble and a change after trials in 2016. Sort of changed up sort of training environment and stuff. Took myself away to the World Cups and then sort of and broke the British record for 100 fly short course when I was out there and, you know, dropped like a second on my PB and I was like, yeah, cool. It was worth it. It was worth it. You know, I put that up there. And to be honest, the ISL stuff just before Christmas, winning that was really up there for me. You know, to sort of come to sort of being like 4 or 5 months ago, not even really in the pool, to ending the year on that. I mean, you know, unbelievable, really. I mean, obviously I was part of a fantastic team and I was happy enough to do my part. But, you know, that was real, real good fun.
What's the hardest set you've ever done in training?
When I was younger, did 3 1,000s fly. And that one always just sticks in my head because we did it in a pool that was like 28 metres long. It was dreadful.
Okay.
Dreadful. Yeah, that one's, you know, that. But I'm talking, I must have been like 15 when I did that, you know. Sort of more like elite level swimming. We used to do one that I was, you know, I wouldn't say it's a hard set, but it was always something I really enjoyed doing as well, which was like a series of like hundreds, 75s, 50s, 25s. You start off on like 4 and everything, then down to 3, then down to 2, then down to 1. Sort of like varying paces throughout. A lot of best average type work into sort of like some 100 pace and some descending down. That one was always a beefy set. And that was one I always sort of was able to get behind and get after as well.
What is your pre-race song?
I don't tend to listen to music before a race. I tend to listen to it sort of when I'm doing my land warm-up beforehand, but then when I get in for getting to the pool for my warm-up, I don't really listen to music then from then on. Just trying to think. At the moment, I'm sort of into a bit of just like 80s rock music at the moment. Just trying to find something.
Can't go
wrong.
Top
of my head. No. I was listening to a bit of Since You've Been Gone by Rainbow the other day.
Oh, yeah.
That was one. Sorry. Yeah. So sort of something like that a little bit. And, you know, anything really. But I don't tend to listen to it right before, personally.
Do you know what? That's the most common answer we've had when we've asked that question to any swimmer that's come on. I think this all these headphones coming onto poolside is all a myth. No one's actually listening to music.
I mean, I'd much prefer probably listening to like a podcast or something as I was walking out rather than actually listening to music. I tend to try and stay as relaxed as I possibly can be in the cool room. Mm. I think if I start getting really up for it, you know, some people really need that. Whereas for me, I always felt, you know, the more relaxed I am, sort of the more ready I am to go, sort of thing. I don't want to waste too much energy beforehand.
I think if it's a home competition as well with the crowd, you want to be able to hear that.
Yeah, exactly.
Get that, you know, get the energy, hear the roar ready for it. Yeah. Interesting.
And final question, which is always a little bit left field. If you were to go on a road trip, there's three spaces in the car. You can take friends, family, celebrities, anyone you want. Who would you take with you?
So I'm a big Liverpool fan. And I'd love to just speak to Jurgen Klopp, if I'm perfectly honest. Just get him in the car. I'd love to have a chat with him, just see how his brain works. I think the guy's, you know, incredible.
Especially after this season as well.
Oh, yeah. Like, I just think the way he goes about doing things is just, you know, he's a manager of people before he's a manager of football. And, you know, I think that's a key skill that you can't... you can't miss. And I don't know, to be honest, to the others, probably take my dog. he's up here with me. He snuck up a few minutes ago. I don't know about a third off the top of my head.
That's all right. It's a good question to ask people because you always get to know them just that little bit more. More insight into them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe someone from like proper ancient history, just to like pick their brain and just understand what was going on back then. But you know, God knows who that would be.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for coming on to this week's episode. I think it's added so much value, not just for swimmers, but certainly for coaches as well, especially if they have been ex-swimmers. I think there's some really important lessons that everyone can take away.
No, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, lots of messages to take away for hopefully all of our listeners, especially if you're one of those people that are thinking of coming back into the sport. Listen to Adam's advice because it's pretty sound.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Best of luck for this summer as well at Commonwealth Games.
Yes.
Thank you very
much.
So that just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so on YouTube, Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And me and Dan will be back in 7 days' time.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.